my mind now, too, is because this is the only process that I didn't do for myself. It was for my wife. So,
okay.
So they're replying to her, but I still did the process. So,
all right. So start over and tell us what the situation is.
Well, I just received a letter from Sallie Mae. Actually, it was dated January 17th, and I received it about the end of February because I was out of the country. So obviously, I didn't have a chance to respond in time. But really, what the letter stated, this was after I finished my administrative process with them, and their reply to my wife, anyway, was, this letter responds to recent correspondence we received, which indicates you are attempting to discharge your student loan debt by means of the Uniform Commercial Code. The federal consolidation loan that we seek to collect from you was issued under the Higher Education Act of 1965, as amended the Act. The rules and regulations by which Sallie Mae devised our loan servicing and collection practices. In signing your promissory note, copy enclosed, you stated that you read and agreed to all terms therein. Under the terms of that contract, the applicable laws governing your student loan, you are obligated to pay the full amount of principal and interest owed. This is not negotiable. As such, you cannot void, invalidate, or otherwise escape your obligation to pay. Payments must be made by a check or money order issued by a United States bank. Additionally, we are returning your documents. Please refer to the attached case, Peters versus BMW of North America Incorporated, regarding the use of fraudulent documents in an attempt to discharge your loan obligations. Any further correspondence with purported UCC filing will be returned to you without comment. You are welcome to call me directly and toll-free if you have any further questions regarding this issue. Sincerely, Bernadine Sasser. So what was kind of interesting also, and when she sent me the contract of my wife that she supposedly signed, the contract, it's typed in there in all uppercase letters. My wife didn't even sign that contract.
Yes, not even a signature. That's interesting.
Yeah. Okay. That was interesting.
All right, well, so the biggest hang-up that people have doing administrative processes is whether they get a response or they don't get a response. Some people that are new to this get hung up. And so let's address the issue of why people don't need to get hung up. So you're at what step in your administrative process?
Well, I completed it, actually, and I was just waiting to hear back from the notary about the the certified letter number and stuff for the so I could do the UCC filing of administrative judgment.
Okay.
I haven't done that yet either. I was kind of waiting on that, but at this point I figured, well, maybe it was more important to respond to this letter, but, you know, so much time has gone by already that it's okay. Just kind of one of those things where you just kind of...
So did they respond with this letter to the notary?
No, they did not. That was the other thing.
Okay.
They sent it directly to me.
Okay. Whether they did or they didn't, doesn't matter. Okay, if they didn't, so was this under the terms of your contract, was this a valid or verified response?
No, it was not. And if I was thinking about it, I should have probably refused for cause, frivolous.
Okay. Now, a lot of people will get this response through the notary as well, with the student loan or with whatever. If it was sent, if that same letter was sent to the notary, would it have been a verified response?
I don't think so, actually, because, well, they're basically trying to contract with me, right? They're just...
It's not a verified
contract that I have with them, but
all right. So here's the hurdle: is that it's not a verified response because it's not on a point by point basis sworn under commercial oath under penalty of perjury, rebutting every single point of your affidavit of specific negative averment, and they're not issuing you a statement of account. You have a request regarding a statement of account. They're not sending you back the original payment instrument, whether it was a bond or accepted for value or whatever. And if they did send you back the bond, you would just conditionally accept it and send it back to them. Okay, notice of mistaken returned instrument. I conditionally accept your offer to return this instrument upon proof of claim that there's any defects in it or that you attempted to deposit the instrument or negotiate the instrument to the treasury in exchange for credit in the amount to set off the debt, and there was some issue with it and the treasury sent you a notice of dishonor. So those are the only two reasons they can send it back to you. If they sent back to you your documents, it doesn't matter because the payment instrument is still in their possession, or it's still, if you did this with the IRS, it's still in the possession of the banker. So it's kind of like if I go to your bank. Wait, let me just ask. You sent this to the CFO or to the IRS?
This was sent to the CFO, but I did send my first mailing to the IRS.
Okay, so if they were to return this to you, these documents to you, it doesn't matter because if I were to go to your bank, if I were to go to Chase Bank with your name and account number and make a deposit to your name or your corporation, and I got back a receipt that I deposited, in Federal Reserve notes, quote-unquote cash, it doesn't, and then I come back home and I do administrative process and I send you a notice of tender deposited into your bank to pay a bill or to pay a debt. If you send me back those documents and say, we refuse this because da-da-da-da-da-da, it doesn't matter. I already deposited money into your bank, and the bank didn't refuse it. And so it doesn't matter if you did it with the IRS and they sent it back. Now, if you did it with the CFO, did they send you back the original instrument?
No.
Okay.
It wasn't the CFO that sent it back to me. It was this gal that's the office of customer advocate.
That's all right. Okay. Materially irrelevant. They're a third-party interloper, and the entity or none of its agents sent you back the original instrument. That's what matters. If they did send you back the original instrument, then you really have to jump on it with the conditional acceptance, and in order to continue with your administrative process. If some other entity sent it back, it's not a verified response, it's not with an affidavit, it's kind of like, don't get hung up on it, continue with your administrative process. You do want to conditionally accept that at some point and nunk-pro-tunk so it's within a few days, but don't get hung up on it. Most people stop their administrative process because they get some well-argumentative letter pointing out that you signed this contract and you're trying to discharge a debt according to UCC and da-da-da, and this is fraudulent and we're going to forward this to the FBI. I've got a lot of student loans. They say, oh, we're going to forward this to the FBI. We're going to forward it to the Secret Service. You're trying to defraud the United States, da-da-da, da-da-da, da-da-da. There's a lot of arguments that will get people hung up and cause people to stop. Keep going forth with your administrative process. Get your administrative judgment. Yeah, conditionally accept that letter. But don't, like, if you're at step two and you're waiting to do step three, don't delay your notice of default or your next step because you got this letter. Because it's a frivolous response. You're going to conditionally accept it. When you come up with a nice conditional acceptance, which is not too difficult, but keep going on schedule with your process. When you get your administrative judgment, file it in a miscellaneous, get it apostilled, file it in a miscellaneous case file at a federal district court, and then you can look up on pacer.gov, or you can look up in the federal filing system that this case, this matter regarding this debt already. There's already an open case filed in a federal district court. So you can use that to get it off your credit report. That will be the most easiest way. Or you can go, if you don't want to file it like that after the notary process, you can go to the Court of International Claims and you can do a, quote, what we call a, quote, B process. So you did your A process kind of privately. Now you're doing your B process with the Court of International Claims. You don't have to do that because if you've already got an administrative judgment with the notary, that should be fine. But once you've got one of these foreign judgments and it's filed in a miscellaneous case file, open up a case to sue the other company or to ratify the foreign judgment and to seek relief and to get them to be compelled by the U.S. court to cease and desist. You can sue them for monetary damages for violating the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act. You can do a lot of things in the public court with some public remedies after your private process and your foreign judgment. But don't get hung up on, you know, don't get hung up on halting what you're doing because you got a non-verified response, because it's not even a verified response. Okay, but I could send you some. I could send you some really cool conditional acceptance letters with affidavits, and you can cater it to what they said. But you could just say, I'm return their stuff to them and conditionally accept it upon proof of claim that that it's a verified response according to the terms and conditions of, you know, notice of whatever, notice of tender for set off and notice of fault and dishonor and da-da-da. That's all you have to say. I conditionally accept your offer upon proof of claim that your response is a verified response to my such-and-such letters, and I'm returning this to you. Now, you can also include an invoice. You know, what's the fee to that you charge them in notice of fault for their sending you frivolous, non-verified responses? If it's $10,000, send them an invoice for $10,000. Then, now you're building up your grounds for a counterclaim for them violating and contacting you after the matter's set off, settled, and closed. Because usually we have in those, the paperwork that you use that you got from us, that we're charging them if they're going to continue to bug us.
Right, and that was interesting too, that the only thing that she did send me back was really my last process, my consent, my notice of fault and dishonor, consent to judgment. That was my fourth mailing that she sent back. And it also has the fee schedule on there. So that's what I kind of found interesting, that the only thing she sent back was the last process on the notary certificate of service, notice of fault and consent to judgment. So I guess one other quick question I would have is, you know, I guess it really doesn't matter when I received this. It was kind of in the mailbox for 3 weeks to a month, but it is dated January 17th from her. So when I non-pro-tunk it, what should I just, within 3 days of that, like on the 20th of January, or what exactly should I do on that in making this response on this conditional acceptance?
Yeah, I would nunk-pro-tunk to the date that you received, that it was delivered in the mail. Same date that you got it, or the next day.
Okay.
Yeah, you may want to even put like RE, capital letters, colon, and then mistaken return of documents, and, you know, include those and send them back to her. And do, I conditionally accept, you know, your offer upon proof of claim that your response is a valid, verified response. Point number two, that your return of my documents was not a mistake. And point three, that, that your arguments are not merely frivolous statements. You know, because you got to understand the difference between a claim and a statement. They can say all the argumentative statements that they want, not with any real power to it, because there's no affidavit. So it's just basically frivolous statements. If you've done all your stuff through affidavit in private, you've got a claim. You've got a claim. You gave them valuable consideration to set off the debt. They've accepted it. They've kept it. And you've got a solid claim. They don't have a claim. They're just using frivolous statements right now. And they think that they can get away with it because they're communicating with you, quote, in private. You know, they didn't even send it through the notary, but even if what they did, I'm still classifying that, you know, they're sending it to you, quote, in private. So you kind of got, and they think that they can get away, and, you know, it's basically just an arm wrestle of conditional acceptances. I have a guy with a child support who discharged a six-figure child support arrears that they came after him for. And we did the process, and they, you know, they had a hearing regarding the matter, and he conditionally accepted going to the hearing upon proof of claim that the matter was not already set off, settled, and closed, or that there wouldn't be a likelihood of it being set off, settled, and closed. I'm not sure if he was done with the process or almost done with the process, which way he worded it, but he didn't go to the hearing. They issued a contempt and an arrest warrant, and he conditionally accepted the contempt of court order, and he conditionally accepted the arrest warrant upon proof of claim that the matter was not set off, settled, and closed, and that the hearing date was not conditionally accepted, and see the attachments herewith. And that was like 5-6 months ago. They never went after him for the contempt or the arrest warrant. You know, so it, but it's this pending thing where they're still contacting him, being like, well, we want to set up a meeting with you to go over your lack of coming up with a pay schedule, da-da-da. They're still bothering him. But, you know, think about it. The order of arrest warrant and the contempt, you know, hasn't been pursued. That's really all that matters. Okay, yeah, they're emailing him or calling him. You know, a lot of people with student loans. You know, I helped a friend of mine out. She's still getting emails of, oops, you missed the payment. You know, please log in and make a payment. You know, and I tell her, well, you know, are you okay with dealing with that for the rest of your life or until they just give up? The bottom line is you're never going to have any of your income taxes withheld. You're never going to have any Social Security taxes withheld. You're never going to have any, what else can they do with a student loan? If you're going to inherit any money from, like, your parents dying or anything like that, that you're in somebody, your straw man is in somebody's will, they can hold that. They can hold that if you haven't paid your student loan. But if but they can't do it. If you set off the account, they're not going to lawfully be able to withhold federal money or inheritance or income tax refunds that you're entitled to if you've lawfully set off and discharged the debt. If they attempt to, you would conditionally accept it upon proof of claim. There's not a foreign judgment in this matter that shows the account is set off, settled, and closed, attached herewith. You can find records at the Secretary of State, care of the notary that we use, and his office and his official records. And if you fail to rebut this affidavit, you're consenting that, you know, you're breaking the law by withholding my federal benefits and da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And they should be held at bay, and they shouldn't be able to levy any of the money that you're owed. So there you go. If you're okay with being, you know, being having to do a response at some point in the future, then you're good. But if you really want to wrap everything up and have them completely never contact you again, what I would do is go into the public side and get an order to ratify that judgment in a U.S. court, because then if they violate that court order, you can put in a motion to have the judge sign off that they're in contempt of court, and then you can take that to the sheriff's office and you can either, you know, levy their accounts. You know, because the thing is like your common law judgment, you don't have U.S. marshals, you don't have sheriffs in the common law. So we can't levy their bank account. I mean, you can do it with commercial liens and stuff, but you don't have people that can go and arrest people, and you don't have subpoenas and dragging people into court to testify. We can't do all that stuff in the private. We got to kind of go into... technically, some people say that the notaries actually have the power to do that, but, you know, good luck trying to do all that without a big conflict coming out of it. What I would say is you got to bring your process when it's done into the court, the U.S. jurisdictional court, and, you know, without giving them jurisdiction over it, you're just petitioning to ratify that so that you can have, you know, U.S. marshals and sheriffs on our side enforcing our orders, enforcing our judgments. You know, and that's kind of what they're going to be going over in Portland at the CIC seminar in a week and a half that I'll be at. Not that I, you know, I already know how to do it, but I'm going to be, you know, brushing up and getting some other, you know, latest teachings of what, you know, what they recommend. But it's not too difficult to do it. We can walk you through it and we can get that judgment. You're just going to need to be willing to go to court. Now, if they don't respond, you can get a declaratory without even showing up. But you're going to be willing to go in as the plaintiff or a petitioner for a 5-minute court hearing. And you're not, you know, you're not going to need to pull any, you know, I'm here as the paramount security interest holder.
No.
It's not going to be a controversy where there's a name game and they're going to say, well, what's your name? Well, what's your name? Are you John Smith or not? You're going to be going in there as the aggrieved party or a petitioner. There's a few different angles to go in at, and we'll have, you know, recommendations on which one to do. But it's a 5-minute court hearing. So if you're willing to do that and wrap that up, that's the real.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Otherwise, for the time being, it'd just be an arm wrestle and just conditionally accept or refuse for cause whatever they shoot your way. And we've seen judgments, arrest warrants, and contempt orders be conditionally accepted and basically, you know, held at bay or reversed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and yeah, including levies as well, and people's bank accounts being levied has been reversed too, all out of court. So it's
exciting stuff. I know that Brandon and those guys come a long ways, and the information. I really wanted to be there in Portland myself, but I just couldn't make it happen. But
okay, all right. So I got things to wrap up tonight. So is there any other questions on that?
That pretty much takes care of it. If you could email a couple of those conditional acceptance, that'd be great. Other than that, thanks, my brother. Appreciate your time, and I know you're a busy guy.
Sure, we'll get some stuff over to you, okay?
All right, thank you.
Okay, bye.